Good? Sorry about that. Tonight we talk about the two different views of the date of the writing of the book of Revelation. This wouldn't be so interesting in about a lot of books of the Bible, but it is interesting about the book of Revelation, and you'll see why. But you also see why this is so important. In other words, the implications of each of these two different dates. The first view we'll examine is the view that the book of Revelation was written during the reign of Nero. And this was an earlier date, about 66 or 68 A.D., somewhere in there. The second view is that the book of Revelation was written during the reign of the Roman Emperor Domitian, and that would have been in A.D. 90. And the historical event that makes the important difference between these two views is the fact that there is the destruction of Jerusalem right between them. That is a major, major event historically and religiously significant and so forth. So we'll see how that relates, why that affects the importance of these two dates or the possible dates for the writing of the book of Revelation. We'll also discuss how the Olivet Discourse plays an important role in this matter. In the Olivet Discourse, and by the way, the Olivet Discourse is in the three synoptic Gospels, in Matthew 24, it's in Mark 13, and in Luke 21. And you should be reading that as part of the preparation, I think, even for studies in Revelation. And Jesus, in the Olivet Discourse, predicts the destruction of Jerusalem. You remember in Mark 13, for example, the first couple of verses, when his disciples talk about these stones in Jerusalem, and Jesus says, "You see these stones?" He says, "Verily I say to you, there will not be one stone here left on another. Every stone will be thrown down." And by the way, that is a prophecy, a prediction of the destruction of Jerusalem, the walls of Jerusalem and the temple, which, living at that time, no one would dream that that could possibly come true. It was just something that wouldn't be real. But he makes that startling prophecy, and it actually comes to pass. But then after that, his disciples say to him, when they were at the Mount of Olives, "When will these things be, Lord, and what will be the sign of your coming?" Now, that's that what kind of starts off the Olivet Discourse in the Gospels. What you notice here is the disciples ask two questions: when will these things be? And second question, what will be the sign of your coming? So there are two questions, and since the prediction of the destruction of Jerusalem is obviously to happen in the near future, in 70 A.D., about 40 years after when Jesus is talking right here about a generation, the prophecy of Jesus' second coming is also something that he talks about in the Olivet Discourse, because the disciples say, "When will these things be about this tearing down of the stones, and what will be the sign of your coming?" So the second question could be understood the things that Jesus gives in the Olivet Discourse as somehow being fulfilled at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, or they could be understood to refer to some more distant time at the future, at the second coming of Christ. So let's begin by talking about the earlier date. And those of you just came in, we're talking about two proposals that scholars have about the date of the writing of the book of Revelation. These are very important information. R.C. Sproul, for example, most of you know and are familiar with R.C. Sproul. I know he's passed away recently, but he described himself as a moderate preterist. And we're going to share with you tonight his arguments for the earlier date of writing. That's the position he takes, that it was written at an earlier date, around 66 or 68 A.D. And his view is called the preterist view. And it sees the book of Revelation as being written earlier. And the important consideration here is that of this earlier date, the writing of Revelation would have taken place prior to or before the destruction of Jerusalem. And this event, that is the destruction of Jerusalem, is impossible to emphasize to you the importance of that. Listen to me. 1.1 million Jews were killed at that time when Jerusalem was destroyed. And one of the great Jewish historian writers, Flavius Josephus, was an eyewitness of this whole event. And a lot of the material that R.C. Sproul shares with you in his discussion, his lectures on the book of Revelation, cover that. And it took place under Titus in the Roman army in 70 A.D. So obviously this means, though, that the visions in the book of Revelation could refer to the siege at Jerusalem, because it was in 70 AD, and if the book of Revelation was written in 66 or 68, that's before the destruction. So possibly some of the visions that we see in the book of Revelation could have to do with this destruction of Jerusalem. This would have an entirely different effect upon how the book of Revelation was received and interpreted by John's readers in the seven churches that we read about, that he wrote the letters, the visions to. And the preterist, listen to this, the preterist, which, again, R.C. Sproul is one of them, a moderate preterist, they insist that the Revelation was written with special reference to this event, the destruction of Jerusalem, suggesting that Revelation has to do with the catastrophic events that Jesus predicted in his Olivet Discourse. Now, sometimes when the disciples ask Jesus, what will be the sign of your coming? And he gives all those signs in the book or in Matthew, in the gospel, synoptic gospels. Those are sometimes referred to as the signs of the times. I'm sure you heard that phrase before. So when Jesus begins to answer these questions for his disciples, he begins to prophesy these signs that are going to happen in the future. Matthew 13:9, for example, he says, "You must be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and you will be flogged in the synagogues. On account of me, you will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them." And in verse 11, he says, "Whenever you are arrested and brought to trial, do not worry beforehand about what to say. Just say whatever is given to you at the time, for it's not you speaking, but it is the Holy Spirit." And then in Acts chapter 4, I just want to point out that these events, and I don't have time to go and read, you know, the narrative in Acts 4, but in Acts chapter 4 and also Acts chapter 5, there's what's called the first persecution after Pentecost, when the early church, when they began to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and the gospel of the kingdom and the truth about Jesus being the Savior of the world and so forth, they were arrested. Peter and John were arrested by the chief priests and by the temple guards and taken in and told not to preach about this Jesus anymore. And then in chapter 5 it happened again and they were actually flogged, beaten before they were released. And that's exactly what Jesus said on Mount of Olives. So you see, some of the things that Jesus says in the Mount of Olives fit in with the early record in the book of Acts. Jesus also said in Mark 13:10 in the Olivet Discourse, he says, "The gospel must first be preached to all nations." But also R.C. Sproul, who is a moderate preterist and tries to somehow fit this in, he says that the Apostle Paul did mention in Romans about how the gospel had already been proclaimed in all the world. But, of course, he was referring to the then known world. And I don't know what passage he's referring to in Romans offhand, but I'm thinking it's probably Romans 8 or 10:18. But anyway, there were other signs that seemed to allude either to a more distant time in the future in this Olivet Discourse that Jesus gave. When they asked the question, "What will be the sign of your coming?" And some of these signs that Jesus gave may have a spiritual fulfillment. This is kind of, you got to follow. May have a spiritual fulfillment, a primary fulfillment at the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, or they may simply have the more distant future at fulfillment when Christ comes again. And also in the book of, Olivet Discourse, Jesus mentions this. Let me read to you Mark 12, 24 to 25. Write down these references. Mark 12, 24 to 25. Jesus says, giving signs, says, "What will be the sign of your comings?" And one of the things he said is, "But in those days, following that distress, the time of great tribulation, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, people will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory, and he will send his angels to gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens." Now, R.C. Sproul refers to these signs, the sun being darkened, the moon not giving its light, stars falling from the sky, as astronomical perturbations. And I thought that sounded like R.C. Sproul. But anyway, the point is, we pointed out to you last week, if you recall, these same signs are given in Isaiah 13 in the Old Testament, 750 years before Jesus was ever born. And there they didn't have reference to the destruction of Jerusalem, but to the coming destruction of Babylon during the Old Testament time. But it also, those astronomical perturbations I think, also are speaking about ultimately the ultimate fulfillment of the day of the Lord when Jesus Christ comes again for the final judgment, great white throne, the great white throne judgment in Revelation 20. So he seems to argue that the coming of Christ in the Olivet Discourse may refer to have a dual application, in other words. When he refers to his second coming in the Olivet Discourse, it could be referred to Jesus coming in judgment upon Israel on the destruction of Jerusalem at 70 A.D. Because that idea of the day of the Lord and the destruction of a nation, or God visiting a nation, visiting them in terms of a time of judgment, had happened throughout the Old Testament on a number of occasions. You remember that? How that Assyria, Babylon, Israel, all the prophets we read last week foretold these events, that they were coming, and they did come. And they were referred to as a visitation of God, a visitation and judgment. So the point is, Sproul is saying that the 70 AD event could be viewed as a visitation of Jesus in judgment upon Israel, because the kind of the time of the Jews ended at that time, and the time of the Gentiles began, and so forth. You hear those times referred to in Paul's letter to the Romans. But obviously there's a part of that, you know, because in the Olivet Discourse, Jesus goes on and says, and he will send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth, one end of the earth to the other, which to me always sounds like the rapture. Some people say the rapture is not in the Gospels, but that, to me, that's it right there. But the point is that we didn't see that happening at 70 A.D., but so there could be some a dual reference. Last week, remember, we talked about primary application, a dual application, and a secondary application. And that's typical of biblical prophecy throughout the Bible. So this could be one example of that. Now then, the evidence of an earlier date for the writing of Revelation, R.C. Sproul approached the evidence from two sources, or two different perspectives. One is external evidence, and the other one is internal evidence. External evidence refers to external biblical sources, and this means some of the writings of the Roman and Greek historians and so forth might help us in dating the book of Revelation. But also internal reference refers to biblical references to specific dates and events that are in the Bible itself. For example, according to Matthew, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea at the time of Herod the Great, that he was Tetrarch of Galilee, and that's in Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. So that's an internal reference that gives you a dating of a book in the Bible. So now looking, and again I'm following R.C. Sproul's approach to how he defends his view of an early date that the book of Revelation was written before the book of Revelation, around 66 A.D. He cites Irenaeus. Some of you have heard of it. It's sometimes pronounced Irenaeus, but I say Irenaeus. It was an early church father who was very well respected and quoted a lot by scholars and so forth. But in a comment that he made regarding the naming of the Antichrist in his book, Against Heresies, book number 5. If any of you are gung-ho and want to look that up on the internet or in the library or whatever, here's what Irenaeus said. Irenaeus, he said, and I'm quoting him, "We will not, however, incur the risk of pronouncing positively as to the name of the Antichrist." He's writing about Revelation. He's writing about who is the Antichrist and naming the Antichrist. And he says, "We will not incur the risk of pronouncing positively as to the name of the Antichrist." And he goes on and says, "For if it were necessary that his name should be distinctly revealed in this present time, it would have been announced by him that beheld the apocalyptic vision." Now here we have Irenaeus writing, and Irenaeus lived between 130 and 202 A.D., so he's an early church father, a second century church father. And then he goes on, he says, "For that was seen not very long time since, almost in our day, toward the end of Domitian's reign." And so here we have Irenaeus writing about the date or the name of Antichrist, saying that John could have given us that name. And then he talks about if that was necessary, and he talks about referring to John, maybe, about how that was not so very long ago, almost in our day, towards the end of Domitian's reign, which was 81 to 96. That's Domitian's reign. And that's after the early writing in 60 or 68. So Sproul is using this to say it's an early writing. So this statement from Irenaeus seems to suggest that the writing of Revelation took place during the reign of Domitian, which would be after the destruction of Jerusalem. However, R.C. Sproul points out a literary grammatical consideration about the word that. And that is, and let me give you the 2 points. This is typical of R.C. Sproul. 2 grammatical considerations. When Irenaeus says, well, that was seen, the one who could have told us, who wrote the visions, John, in the book of Revelation, he says, that was seen not very long time since, almost in our day, toward the end of Domitian's reign. And the key is the word that. What is that was seen? He says, number one, he could be that he's saying that John's vision, the book of Revelation itself that he wrote down, was seen during the reign of Domitian. Okay? Secondly, he also could be referring to John himself, the one who could answer the question, who is the Antichrist, who wrote the vision and was seen as late as the end of the reign of Domitian, leaving open the possibility of an earlier writing before the book of Revelation was written. It was John, because John was, according to history, is one of probably the longest living apostle. And many people think he lived to be 90 years old or so. So, again, Sproul comes up with the idea that this also could still be a reference to an earlier writing. So R.C. Sproul's conclusion is this statement by Irenaeus technically could mean either one. Now, one further consideration about Irenaeus, external evidence of when the book was written, and another significant statement by another early church father, Clement. Sproul points out that elsewhere in his writings, Irenaeus makes reference to ancient copies, quote, ancient copies of the book of Revelation. So here we have a second century church father born in 130 AD referring to the book of Revelation as ancient writings. Sproul's comment on this is, it says he seems unlikely that he would refer to something written during his lifetime as ancient. But 90 AD was not during the lifetime of Irenaeus. He was born at 130. So it's about 40 years before he was born. But still, this seems like the word ancient doesn't seem like that's a lot of time to refer to the book of Revelation as ancient writings. Sproul says also, if Revelation were written 100 years earlier, such a description would be more likely. There would have been approximately 80 or 90 years, I'm saying, a gap from this earlier date, 60 AD, to Irenaeus, adulthood. He has to be an adult that he's referring to. He couldn't be saying this when he was just born. And so the 80 or 90 year gap. But so I think when Sproul says if it's 100 years ago or so, you could call it ancient, I think he's just rounding off 80 or 90 years to 100 years to kind of, you know, support his view. Sproul also makes a note of the fact that Clement, who is another early church father, who lived 35 to 99 A.D., very early in the first century, Clement, listed by Irenaeus and Tertullian as bishop of Rome. Clement was the bishop of Rome. And he held that office from 88 to his death in 99. And Clement argued that the apostolic revelation, that is all the New Testament epistles and gospels and all those writings from the apostles, all the inspired New Testament documents ceased during the reign of Nero. You remember the date of that? The date of Nero? 68. He committed suicide. Nero died in 68. So he's saying that all the New Testament documents, Clement made a statement that all the inspired writings of the apostles ceased in this time. At the time of Nero when he died. And so that would have been an early date then. Sounds like he's saying that. So it would have been an early date, and it would be before the destruction of Jerusalem. So this would mean that the canon of Revelation in the New Testament, including the book of Revelation, was completed by the year 68, the earlier date for Revelation, before the destruction of Jerusalem. Now this comment seems conclusive, but Sproul doesn't mention that the book of Revelation was not commonly received by the church as canonical until the middle of the second century. That's just something you learn from other places. But I'm not saying the book of Revelation wasn't a part of the canon of Scripture. I'm saying that some of the early church did not recognize the book of Revelation as a part of the canon, the inspired canon of Scripture, until the middle of the second century. So this again would take away from this particular argument that Sproul is making here. Now, the argument from internal evidence, and here's where you're going to have to move kind of fast writing down references. These are time frame references, and this is internal evidence from the Bible itself or from the book of Revelation. Let me just give them to you quickly. Revelation 1:1, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants what must soon take place. Now, Sproul is giving you this list of references right out of the internal evidence to show the indications that it wasn't too long after the writing of the book of Revelation that these things happened and that they didn't happen afterwards. But I'm going to give you a whole list of them, so write them quickly. Revelation 1:3, blessed is the one who reads aloud the words of this prophecy, and blessed are those who hear it and take it to heart what is written in it, because the time is near. The time is near. Seeming like that would fit well with a book written in 68 A.D. if Jerusalem was destroyed a couple years later in 70 A.D. See, this fit well. Then I'll just mention some others and give you the key phrase. Revelation 3:10 speaks about that hour which is about to come upon the whole world. Which is about to come upon the whole world. That's Revelation 3:10. Revelation 22:6 uses this phrase, things that must soon take place. Okay? Revelation 22:7. Look, I am coming soon. Okay? Revelation 22:10. Then he told me, do not seal up the words of the prophecy of this scroll, because the time is near. Got the idea? These are all references from Revelation that seem to be a time frame reference that it's close at hand, about to take place. And then Revelation 22:12, look, I am coming soon and my reward is with me, and so forth. So Sproul's argument is simply this, and I'm quoting him. It seems a bit of a stretch to somehow interpret these statements as all being over 2,000 years later. You know, all these statements about it's going to come soon, but it's 2,000 years later. So Sproul's argument is that these references have to do with the nearness of the destruction of Jerusalem, which was just a couple years away. And the contemporary, Sproul says, who received these words from John would have to consider these references of nearness, especially in light of any signs or worries or the impending invasion of the Romans, which they must have had some signs that was going to come, which actually did take place in 70 A.D. All right, now, besides these time frame references, another internal evidence, this is kind of an interesting argument that Sproul makes, and that has to do with the temple in Jerusalem. The temple in Jerusalem. I see we're not going to finish this tonight. We'll do the best we can. We'll take it up next week. But Sproul argues that so much of the language and the symbols in the book of Revelation is borrowed from the temple in Jerusalem itself. It's replete, he says, with temple allusions throughout the book of Revelation. And yet there's not the slightest hint anywhere that the temple is no longer standing. That's an interesting thought. You know, we may not even think of that. But if the temple's been destroyed already, and the later date of the book of Revelation is written in 90 instead of 68 A.D., well, the temple would be destroyed by that time. And he says it would not have been standing at that time. Sproul acknowledges that this is an argument from silence, but it's still evidence that corroborates the argument for an earlier date of the writing of Revelation. Now then, I switch from R.C. Sproul for a minute here to Vern Poythress, who's another author, the one that wrote The Returning King. He says this, some interpreters think that Revelation 11, 1-13, especially verse 8, I'll write down the reference, that's all I can do tonight, Revelation 11, verses 1-13, and especially verse 8, some people, Vern Poythress points out, think that this is a passage in the book of Revelation that predicts the fall of Jerusalem that took place in 70. If this is true, it would be an allusion to the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, and by logical deduction, the destruction of the temple, which is what Sproul says there is none of in the book of Revelation. So just kind of giving you, both sides of the arguments. And then one more thing I think we have time to consider tonight, and that is Sproul makes one more argument from Revelation 17. Write down the reference. Revelation 17, verses 8 to 10 is a key passage in the dating of Jerusalem, of the date of the book of Revelation. Reading this passage, it says, "The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction." I'm going to skip down to verse 9. Verse 9 says, "Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits." And if you read the beginning of Revelation 17, verse 3, you read about the woman who's sitting upon a scarlet red beast, a scarlet beast. And this beast is what he's talking about. And this beast has seven heads. So it says the seven heads are seven mountains. The one who has wisdom, let him know. He says the seven heads are seven mountains. That's what it means. On which the woman sits. And they are seven kings. Five have fallen. One is, and the other is not yet. And when he comes, he must remain yet a little while. So here you have an interesting prophecy. And so Sproul asks the question, what is this city with seven hills? What is this city with seven hills? He says it's possible that this could be an obscure reference to Israel itself on seven hills. But he says in all of antiquity, the most famous nickname for Rome was the city on seven hills. So it's more likely that it's a reference to Rome. And then he asks again, who is the sixth king? Because it says five have fallen and one is now. Revelation 17:10 says one is now. And R.C. Sproul says this tells us that the book is being written at the time of the sixth king who reigns over the city of seven hills. Sproul then asks, who is this king? And the question he discusses is, who is the sixth emperor of the Roman Empire? And then Sproul discusses several possible ways of counting the various rulers of Rome. And I'm telling you, among scholars, there's a big debate and argument about how you count the emperors and how you get to number six. But Sproul's method starts with Julius Caesar, who was never given the title of emperor. But nevertheless, he was like the George Washington of the Roman Empire emperor. So you had to begin counting with him. That's Sproul's argument. And if you begin counting with Julius Caesar, then Nero comes out to be the sixth king, Nero. And he says that explains a whole lot. And because of who Nero is and what I told you, he's even called the beast by his contemporaries. Okay, now next week I'm going to take up from here and we will talk about the later date. This had to divide this lesson in half, but you got a little, hopefully a little taste and interest in the dating. You see, it's important again because between the two proposed dates, earlier date before the destruction of Jerusalem, later date after the destruction of Jerusalem, important implications for both. Yeah.